You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. Happy Thursday, September 24th, 2020. I do this to remind myself only, and also to remember the day after we saw a cold-blooded crime committed on an MLS field. It was troublesome. I don't know if my conscience will ever recover from this. Charlie, I've put the link in the private chat so that you can watch a predator at work, predation in the flesh, in Miami, an owl just doing its, doing what owls do. Do you guys see this? Am I the only one who saw this? Please react to it, Charlie, as you see it. And of course, we'll get to all the 13 games and everything
I'm
else.
Watching.
What is that? I mean, this is,
oh,
this poor, yes, oh. This poor bird.
Oh, no.
Too much for me.
Oh, yeah.
Too much for me in a soccer broadcast.
Yeah.
I mean, God. He plays with it. He looks at the camera.
He's so squeamish of nature. Like, it's a natural cycle.
I love owls, too, but
it's yeah.
It's like a sweet little parakeet or something. He just
a chickadee. Just really. Yeah. Having a terrible moment in its short-lived life, unfortunately. If you didn't see this, I guess we retweeted on Extra Time. And when Anders did tweet that, I thought, I don't know if I can handle that. I think maybe I'm going to have to turn away. It was a big night in MLS, 13 games, 26 teams in action. That's the first time that's ever happened. Of course, this is the first year we've had 26 teams. So, yeah. It was also, today is the anniversary, by the way, of the first days of the 1996 MLS Cup playoffs. So if you want to follow the past as you think about the present and the future, go over to Instagram, MLS in 96 handle. We're going to talk about almost all the games, the ones that piqued our interest, at least. We are going to talk to Peter Coates, who is an expert down in Argentina on the Super League, on Argentine football. Of course, Marcelino Moreno is the latest import in Major League Soccer. But he has a lot to talk about otherwise, whether it's Atlanta United and Pity Martinez and the coaching search and Bavela Reynoso and perceptions in Argentina MLS. We'll talk about him later. And we'll also, before we get started here, give a congratulations to Tori Pinso. She refereed Nashville DC United on Wednesday night. She is the first female center referee to run an MLS game in 20 years. She joined Sandra Hunt, Nancy Lay, and Carrie Seitz as the four who have accomplished that. So huge congratulations to Tori Pinso. Gave her some props in instant replay. She got her big calls right. That red card for Russell Knauss. Big win for Nashville. Congratulations to Tori. You guys want to jump right into it? Let's start in the Eastern Conference.
About it.
Well, piece of history, wasn't this the first time ever that there was 13 MLS games in a day?
Yes. Yeah, but that, like I said, that was an impossibility before, right? Like you had to have 26 teams.
Exactly, Weeby. If you invent things, then you get to make your own history.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
So I dream of the day when there will be 14 MLS games in one day, and then it'll be a top 10 league in the world.
What a day that will be. What a day it'll be.
Who
Columbus,
knows?
Orlando, Toronto, they all won tough games. Columbus with a win over Minnesota United. Kai Kamara made his debut 2-1. Minnesota was hacked off about an offside call late on that they thought was onside. And so replay, we said it was offside, but that's not going to make Adrian Heath and Kai Kamara happy. Orlando went to Kansas City, got a big win. Kansas City forgot how to hold an offside line for about 4 minutes. Just poof, straight out of their brains. Couldn't do it. Couldn't figure it out. Down 2-0. Couldn't find the equalizer. And Toronto got a late PK to win against NYCFC at Red Bull Arena. So the question I have is, who is the best team in the East? Who's the favorite in the East? And I think they might mean different things because this year I keep thinking about the playoffs. And I keep thinking about the way this season's panning out, and I keep thinking about how it's completely incoherent. And one Wednesday to the next Saturday, you don't know what you're going to see. You don't know what team you're going to see. You don't know what formation you're going to see. You have no idea. And then I try to extrapolate that to a 16-team single elimination playoff game. I just don't know how it's going to turn out. But right now, in this moment, Dave, when you think of these three teams, who sits on top? Is it clearly the Crew? Does anybody else have a shout?
I don't know. Maybe why don't you keep asking me the question in different ways and maybe you can get my answer for me.
Sorry, I really went on and on there. Oh, boy.
It's Columbus. They have arguably the best goalkeeper in MLS right now. They have the defender of the year in Jonathan Mensah right now. They have the best midfield when healthy in the Eastern Conference. And they've got a guy up top in Giassi Zardes who's playing at an MVP level. They've got depth on the wings. They've got danger on the wings. You look at the way Pedro Santos plays the position versus how Mokhtar plays it, versus how Diaz plays it, and Etienne. They can do a lot of different things. And then the quality at fullback. So they have so many ways to beat you. And I think what we've seen since MLS has returned and in the tournament is they have done all those things. There's been games where they scored early and they put teams under pressure and dominate. There's been games where they come out a little slower and knock the ball around and pull teams out of their block a little and then create chances like they did yesterday. The Santos no-look cross to a diving Zellerion header who hasn't played in 3 weeks. Like, that's something that we're not seeing with other teams. And then you add in on the road against Chicago going 2-0 down and coming back and tying it 2-2 after Zardes comes off the bench. So they can beat you in a lot of ways. And the biggest thing that stands out to me is I trust them defensively. When you look at all the teams in the top half of this group, and we're going to talk about Toronto and Philly and I think Orlando, Jonathan Mensah is the best center back in all of those teams, groups combined. And then you've got the quality in front of him of Arthur to help protect a little bit. You can bring in a more defensive option if you need to alongside him in Alash, or you could play Nagbe when he's healthy. Even without Nagbe, they've still continued to win. And there are a few teams in MLS that can miss a player like that and continue to get performances at a high level. So to me, Columbus started, I think, coming out of the tournament at this spot, and they haven't lost it.
So, yeah, I mean, look, Atlanta United couldn't do that. They couldn't lose Darlington Nagbe and continue the high level. Now they lost other things, too. Do you have any concerns, or does it throw a flag in your brain? And I'm speaking strictly from the research I did on the MVP column I wrote, that their schedule is pretty soft. Like, it's a lot of Cincinnati, who just can't, they don't even know how to get shots. Like, they're basically playing for nil-nil draws at this point. It's a lot of Chicago, who have been wildly, crazily inconsistent. It's a lot like fighting over PKs that change a match.
Well, let's have this conversation, though. Toronto just played Vancouver and Montreal four times, right?
Yeah.
You're going to bring Philly in this conversation. Philly's playing a team, Red Bulls, who just fired their coach, and a team in D.C. that I think Charlie thinks his USL sides could take advantage of in a one-on-one game. I think everyone's got weird schedule, but I don't think that's the way to go about this. Orlando's played Atlanta how many times over the last few weeks? Miami.
I mean, look at Seattle and Portland. Seattle and Portland are getting everywhere. A ton of the San Jose earthquakes. Like,
yeah, it's everywhere. We also don't know what a lot of all of this means. Chicago, as Doyle came on and said on Monday, has played well against good teams, and then they go and beat Houston 4-0 in the middle of the week, and Berich looks very good, and they seem to have solidified a little defensively with Pineda coming in at center back. So I don't think you can always put it down on who the opponents are, and you have to beat the teams you play, right? Like, RSL, I thought, was a good team, then they lost to Vancouver at home. So you still, it doesn't make it easy just because those teams are bad.
You got the crew, Charlie? Does Orlando or Toronto have a shout here? Because, like, part of me just looks at Toronto always and thinks talent level, especially the front half of the field. They are going to, when the time comes, just like they did last year when it's like, hey, Alejandro Pozuelo will just be a false nine and we'll just, like, figure out a way to get the MLS Cup that they'll always be there. Do they have a shout? Do Orlando have a shout? Is this just so clearly Columbus sitting up there on 30 points, first one to get there? Or is there an argument to be made?
There's an argument to be made. Columbus Crew are the best team right now. They have the strongest spine. And I'll even one up Goss and say that Mensah has been the MVP this year.
Whoa! Yeah. Of the league.
Wow.
Of the league. A defender from Charlie Davies?
No. And you know I love my attackers. You know I love my goal scorers. Salute to everybody doing it for their clubs. But Jonathan Mensah, for me, has been the MVP this year. Just being this relentless, smart, tactical, defensive player who you can rely on, who's consistent, and who everyone you could see like vibes off of. This is a tremendous, talented center back in this league that we're not really accustomed to seeing. A center back with his capabilities and how he's kind of set the tone for Columbus Crew. Now, but don't get me wrong. They have Nagbe, they have Zellerion, they have Zardes, they have Eli Room. They do have players in place along the spine, which allows them to be the best team in the Eastern Conference. And I think Caleb Porter has also, you know, brought in players like Pedro Santos, who gets him in form, putting the right pieces to the of the puzzle together. Etienne is also a signing that's kind of not been talked about. He adds quality to them.
Not here. It's been talked about here. Dabgott always gets time on extra time.
Not nationally, though. Luis Diaz.
Oh, you're saying extra time radio is not a national broadcast?
We're the definition of a get out of here.
I know that you, Goss, I know you love to talk about Mukhtar and what he's brought to the table. They just have a lot of pieces. And I think that for the large part, Porter's gotten it right. Right. And so for that, in that instance, they are the top team. Teams that have a shout, that have an opportunity to get up there and challenge, maybe not in the regular season, but in the playoffs, Philadelphia Union, Andre Blake, you have him in goal. He keeps them in games. Mark McKenzie has continued to get better and develop into one of those, top rated center backs in this league, because one, we always knew his athleticism was going to bail him out of situations where he could be out of position or take a gamble and recover. But now, tactically, he's in the right spot. He's finding himself making those smart decisions, and his distribution, which has been great. Aronson continues to get better. Obviously, it looks like he's leaving for Red Bull Salzburg. But with Bedoya and Montero as the other central midfielders, they've been narrow. They can win games. It's really dependent on Kasper Schobielko or Sergio Santos, who's going to be the goal scorer. So for them, and then TFC, if they can get it right with Paolo Piatti, and then you throw in Jozy Altidore and Akinola, and then you have Pozuelo kind of pulling the strings, if they can get it right defensively, that's my question. Mavinga and Omar Gonzalez, when they're at their best, great. But we haven't seen them at their best. And that relationship needs to be right. If they can be solid, and you can depend on them to keep a clean sheet or make those big plays, that's a team that you got to watch out for.
Where does Orlando fall in this? Because we haven't really said their name, and yet they are second in the East, I believe second in the Supporters Shield standings. They go to Kansas City, who are right there at the top of the West, have a ton of talent, maybe haven't been consistent, and they get a 2-1 win. Now, it wasn't always comfortable. You have to say that. It wasn't always comfortable, and they snagged two goals in like 3 minutes on busted offside traps that were just diabolical for Sporting KC fans to watch. Just like so painful to see those go back to back. But they didn't start Chris Mueller. They did not start Gerald Dike. They have a ton of depth. They have Oscar Pareja, who might be the perfect coach for a COVID situation. Because one, tactically, he's going to get you organized. We always knew that. That was sometimes the complaint, is like FC Dallas were so organized that they weren't as flowing as maybe you wanted them to be with Fabian Castillo or with Mauro Diaz, but they lived on the counter and they killed on it. But he'll have you organized. And then he's like the perfect cheerleader. Like, you talk to those guys, arm around the shoulder, we're a family. Like, you saw it in MLS's back, certainly. But I think in a time of COVID, when it's all so crazy and all the circumstances and your family life and your personal life and your professional life and everything you're doing is randomized and difficult, having that consistent positivity is huge. Let's rank these. Four. One is Columbus. Oof. Who's two? Who's two of these four teams? Who's the second best team? Do we go by standings and say Orlando?
I think Charlie said it best. The talent in Toronto. I mean, you've added Piatti to everything they had, even without Michael Bradley. If they can get it right at center back, then they are the second best team. They probably have the highest ceiling in the Eastern Conference. But we saw in the MLS's back tournament, in big games, if you get a mistake from one of those two center backs, or if a team comes out and is able to take advantage of them with a quick center forward, which is everywhere in MLS, now you're a Toronto team in a one-game playoff that has to play from behind, which is tough. So there's question marks, but Toronto still has that highest talent outside of Columbus.
And I'm going Philly 3.
Interesting. Even though they go to Cincinnati and just can't even like sniff the goal for 90 minutes.
So Charlie, one of the things for me that stands out is you look at LAFC last year, best team in MLS, maybe the best team in MLS regular season history, but they had one way to win games. And in the playoffs, they lose. So I look at Philly and I look at Orlando, and I think Orlando's shown they can control possession and create chances, or they can sit and counter like they did in KC. Can Philly, if teams come in and say, we're not going to let you counter us, we're going to sit back, can Philly beat them?
Well, what we saw against Cincinnati, they couldn't get it done. And for me, it goes down to what are you doing to break down teams? How are you setting up the team? How do you not play Anthony Fontana, who has scored 3 goals in 2 matches in different ways, a creative playmaker, a young player at that as well, and doesn't get involved in the game, doesn't even be brought on as a substitute. That blows my mind. That blows my mind. And so for this Philadelphia Union side, you have Ilsenio, who we've known he can break down teams, but he can only play 15, 20 minutes and give you his max.
He's got the Charlie Davies oxygen tanks.
Right now, yes. Maybe. But Anthony Fontana is a young player who gives you something creative in that attacking third, who can pull tricks out, who's not afraid to try things, which is one of the reasons why I really think that this kid's ceiling is high. How do you not get him in the game, knowing that Cincinnati can only beat you one way? So that is a concern for me. But I think Orlando is a team that will push and won't sit back. I think they will. They take their chances. They're flexible as well, but they're a team that they like their chances when they press yeah. high and they go for it. So that's why I think with Andre Blake in goal, I put Philadelphia Union 3 when we're talking about playoff situations. Orlando still, with Oscar Perea, have a good a chance as anyone to win the East as well in a playoff situation, because what we saw in the MLS's back tournament, I just don't think that it'll happen this year. At Pedro Galese, I think he's been arguably the best signing for that team. He really yeah. is a fantastic keeper. He makes big time saves. They just need a goalie to be consistent, just a normal save, a regular save. He goes out and takes it one step further. So he's been absolutely fantastic.
They have you're talking about depth, three yeah. center backs that they've kind of mm-hmm. cycled in and out. Yep. Rodrigo Schlegel does not always defend in the most sort of like traditional nope. fashion, I will say. Nope. There mm-hmm. are some points where I'm like, I don't know what the hell you're doing right now, but somehow yeah. it worked, or you got away with it, or whatever it might be. Janssen's been good. Antonio yeah. Carlos has been good. They have good fullbacks. Like, they yeah. weathered the storm. I mean, that goes mm-hmm. the way they win. So the four, my four, would be Columbus, Toronto, Orlando, and then Philly.
Yeah.
I just agree. Think Orlando has more consistent, dangerous players. And they'll get somebody on form. They can cycle through it. It might be Nani. It might be Mauricio Pereira that night. It might be Mueller. It might be Daryl Dike. I mean, last night it was guys you wouldn't think of, and like Tesho, and then Benji Michel is now a consistent goal scoring threat as well. So it's for me, they are three. But this all kind of circles back on like the randomness of MLS. Like, you could kind of throw these teams in a pot and you have no idea what happens in November.
So I'll say this. In general, right now, this year in MLS, that's the case. But I think what's fun is the quality of these four is obvious, right? We're yes. not, there's no fifth debate. No other team in the East is in this conversation, which shows you these four teams, while it can be random between them, are a cut above everyone else. And that's what's great about this conversation is these are four teams that you think, if healthy, are going to be in the semifinals of the Eastern Conference.
Yes.
And any of them can beat each other. In the West, I think it's a more chaotic conversation. And in past years in the East, I think it was more two teams. Maybe three, and then someone could be a wild card, like sort of what Philly did last year. But right now, these four teams are good. They are playing good soccer. They are getting results while everyone else is chaotic, and they can all beat each other.
Beautiful thing. Sunday, we get our wish of 1-2 in our list here. Toronto, Columbus, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus, TSN, if you want to watch this one. It's our MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM, game of the weekend. So we got to make predictions here. Mm-hmm. As I said, our 30 points, Columbus Crew. Back 5 points right now, equal in games played, Toronto FC, but a little bit less consistent. Charlie, who you got? Who wins this game?
I'm going to go with the Columbus Crew. Consistency. I feel that they took their foot off the gas against Minnesota, and they were lucky to come away with the 3 points. Considering that, you know, it was an offside goal. So they were able to get that right. But this Columbus Crew team, I think when they're motivated and they're hungry, I just don't see a team beating them. With Nagby in the midfield controlling the tempo, Zella Ryan always finding those seams, and then Jossie Zardes, who's just a very dependable finisher in this league. He's really grown as a striker. I've loved what I've seen, because now he's impacting the game in different ways. I've always talked about, okay, yes, we all know Nagby has pace. We all know he makes runs in behind. What else can you do? Give me something else. How do you make Zardes. That jump? Right, Zardes, sorry. He's showing okay, hold up play. He's looking to make dummy runs, decoy runs to allow other players to fill spaces. So I really like what I've done, what he's done for the Crew, and all the other players have been able to step up. And so for Mensah, continue to organize that back line. I really do think that Columbus Crew have the edge.
So I agree with you with Columbus. I think also Josie gets the start this Wednesday, so I doubt to see him. We see him start again. And then you look at Columbus, and as you said, Charlie, all the ways they can beat you. I look specifically at Toronto. You've got the speed of Luis Diaz, which I think hurts Toronto getting that fullback up the field. And if they choose to, then he can pull Mavinga out. If he does that, now Zardes is getting space, getting opportunities 1v1 down the middle, whether it's that cross in or the ball cut in. And for Columbus, Fatai Olashko is out hurt. Nagbe doesn't start in this game. We don't know how healthy he is. Sebastian Berhalter comes off the bench and is just picking passes. And it's easy for him. And Arthur kind of steps up a little more into the possession role in central midfield. Once again, they have so many ways to beat you that when you're looking at short rest, Columbus is a team that can swap guys in and out and still maintain a high level or even change the way they can beat you. So I go with Charlie as well. I think Columbus gets the win.
Yeah, look, I think that's been the most impressive thing, right? Is that Zelarayán has been out for stretches, that Nagbe has been out for stretches. And if you looked at this Columbus Crew team before this season started, when we admittedly were all high on them, if they were missing those two guys, I don't think that any of us would have predicted that they would be in the position that they're in. Look, I still think for whatever reason, I just think Toronto wins this game, mostly because I have to go against the both of you to get the points. Like, that's the way this game works. So I need a Toronto win. I think Alejandro Pozuelo is the best pure attacking player in this league, period. I don't think anybody can do all the different things he can do and does consistently. You're giving me a funny look here, Charlie. That takes us right into the MVP conversation. I did my MVP tiers. This thing is wide open this year. It's not a Joseph Martinez year. It's not a Carlos Vela year. It's not a Zlatan year. Like, Chris Mueller is among the guys that I think should have a shout. Don't shake your head at me. I know you're going to do that. Jossie Zardes is for sure there. And for me, Alejandro Pozuelo, for sure there as well. Let's just transition straight into that. Give me one name right now. One name. Who is the MVP, the Landon Donovan MVP of Major League Soccer in your mind?
I've already said it. If Columbus Crew win the Supporters' Shield, I'm going with Jonathan Mensah as the MVP of Major League Soccer this year.
What if Jossie Zardes wins the Golden Boot?
I'd say congratulations. There's the Golden Boot. And the MVP still goes to Jonathan Mensah. Because unless you are scoring at just a phenomenal rate like we saw Joseph Martinez do, like we've seen Carlos Vela do, where you know this guy is scoring loads of goals, hat tricks, big goals, big moments, and doing it every single match.
Dominant.
Just dominant. Then you say, okay, here is the trophy, MVP, and the Golden Boot. You've done it. That's not what we're seeing from Jossie. Yeah, he's scoring goals, but we're also seeing Zelarayán and Nagbe and
Pedro Santos has been ridiculous too. Like
we've seen a number of attacking players do their job and look great at times. One player who's remained the same and has remained as impactful in every single match has been Jonathan Mensah. And for me, that is why he gets the MVP.
If this is
right now, if the season ended right now,
if there was any year for a defender,
yeah, true,
to win MVP,
this is
it would be this year. It would be this year. Look, Mensah's played every minute for them. He absolutely deserves a shout. Again, you have voters. The voters in this case.
Was he in your article?
He was. He was in his own tier, which was defenders, parentheses, so never going to win. That was the tier. He was there. I said he's been great.
A race never going to win.
Yeah, it's just that's unfortunately the way the thing goes. What about you, Dave? A realistic pick, perhaps.
Did you just throw shade on Charlie by calling my...
No, I didn't throw shade. I'm throwing shade on the voters. Yeah. The voters can't wrap their minds around it, so it'll never happen.
And I think you made a good point in your article when you look at Seattle. I think Columbus is going to have the same problem. Zardes is going to get votes. Zelarayán is going to get votes. And if Mensah gets votes, none of them are going to have enough to get over the top. So I look at two players, both in the Eastern Conference. One is Pozuelo. Even with the talent in Toronto, whether Josie's out, whether Bradley's out, whatever's going on, it's always him that the team is now built around, and they continue to be one of the best teams. And I think Nani has to get mentioned because Orlando's been where they've been, and he is the piece that other teams have to prepare for. And he is the piece that ignites them. And when you look at the MLS is Back tournament, which you'll tell me I can't, and I do not care, because I'm not going to turn my brain off and say I didn't watch competitive soccer games that mattered in 2020, even if the stats and the knockouts don't go into his MLS stats. He was the one, after a good group stage where it felt like the form was going to drop, that I think carried them through to the final. And he was the one emotionally, and then the goal scoring, as we saw against Minnesota, to get them through to that final. And when I look at Orlando, yeah, DK's played great, and Pereira's been a difference, and Mueller's been awesome. All of that is because other teams have to focus on Nani. And when he comes in field, he makes life easier for those other players. He's the one coming in field setting up Mueller to take someone 1v1 off that curled ball. And he's the one setting up DK, and he's the one swapping in when Pereira pulls a defensive midfielder wide. That doesn't work if Nani doesn't come in field and create opportunities for their team. So if he can stay healthy and he can keep at this level, and does, I don't think he has to lead in either category, but if he breaks 10 and 10 in goals and assists and Orlando continues to perform this way, he has to be in the shortlist.
I feel like it might be a split the vote situation with Orlando as well, though.
You think someone's going to vote for Chris Mueller for MVP?
Don't be foolish.
No, I know. Look, and that's what I said in the article. It's like I basically put Chris Mueller in because producer Anders has been all up in the ear, all up in the rundown, saying get Chris Mueller some love. And then Ben Bear came out with a nice little, you know, goals, assists combined per 90, and Chris Mueller's at the top of it, and that's shocking. And so I wanted to make people think,
which is great.
But you're right.
Nice.
Why he won't win is because he's Chris Mueller. He's Chris Mueller. Like, nobody's going to vote for him. So you're right about that.
I don't want to hear the, oh, he's just an American. It's Chris Mueller. No, we're talking about real MVP. No, Chris Mueller does not deserve to be in that conversation of the top players in Major League Soccer.
But real quick, to Charlie's point, and I think one of the reasons I brought up the MLS Back tournament is because you watch a regular season, you say, well, what will they do in the playoffs? Well, that voting doesn't count. It hasn't happened yet, whatever. We have seen a playoffs. And Mueller, as great as he was in the group stage, struggled in the knockouts. Okay. And Nani carried this team. So when you're weighing that, and obviously if Sebastian Blanco was healthy and playing well, I think he would be the walkaway winner after winning that
for
MVP.
Sure.
But when you weigh that, you have to bring that in when you weigh that and say, when the chips are down, Nani's the guy this team's built around. He's the one that's going to lead.
Let me throw some names at you just for quick reactions.
Yep.
Quick reactions. Christian Pavone.
Yeah,
does fantastic Christian Pavone deserve it?
Fantastic player, but can't because of where the squad is. You're in 18th place in the Supporters Shield standings. Get out of here. Great player, but get out of here. No, you got to.
Okay.
If you want to be in that position, you single-handedly have to be winning games for this team or scoring just phenomenal at a phenomenal rate to pull them out of the basement.
So for a while, he was doing the
he
first.
He was doing fair, that, but it has
that hasn't that yeah, hasn't continued in the end. Last like yeah. 4 or 5 games. Diego Rossi, he's leading the Golden Boot.
He has a shout, 100%. If you lead the league,
how does he have a shout when they've because, getting smoked
because
in game?
He is leading the team, leading the league in goals. So you have a shout, and he's been good. He's been good. It's not just I'm getting tap ins. Like he's been good. So
Phillips almost had a hat trick in 14 minutes yesterday. I don't know that Rossi gets it for pure goal scoring.
Darwin Quintero in my potential contenders, but again,
should be mentioned.
But that goes to Galaxy too, and Christian Pavone, which is the Dynamo, are not good enough to have an MVP come from them right now, despite the fact that Darwin maybe is the most influential attacker since the restart. Here are some dark horses. Kasper Schabilko?
Stop it.
Nope. Okay. Land it there. Rodolfo Pizarro. This is a very dark horse. What if Gonzalo Higuain is basically an MVP and Pizarro is the guy feeding him balls?
No.
I like just a dark horse. Just a thought. Diego Valeri. Yeah. He's really producing.
Now that's interesting. Yeah. Now
he's
that's
really
interesting
producing.
Because he has stepped up in the absence of Blanco. And I guess it's almost like, oh, this is my show. You know, it's like I'm back to being the Valeri we all know because Sebastian Blanco isn't getting a share of the ball or commanding the ball like he normally does. Everyone has to go through Valeri for this team to have success because you need that type of player. Definitely, if Portland continue to climb and get these results, he definitely should be in the conversation.
How about Hot Boy?
Hot Boy.
So maybe over there spilling drinks over Diego.
No, thank God. Thank God that was not. It was empty. I was a panicked moment.
Eyes.
Yeah, that was a panicked moment.
I didn't know where the noise was
like,
coming
oh
from.
Oh my God, did I just do that right now?
So the other thing with Valeri.
It's a perfect distraction to me saying Kevin Molina. Now we won't even talk about that. Just go right past that. Don't worry about that.
The other thing with Valeri is Blanco did what he did in the up until this point to set them in a stage where they struggled coming out of the MLS's back tournament, but they had so many points that they're currently sitting in second place in the West. That wouldn't be the case. And so I don't know that Valeri has enough time to say this was my season and I carried this team, unless somehow they win Supporters Shield.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a dark horse, but probably the winner is going to come out of that main group, as we said, because it's going to take success and it's going to take personal production as
well. Does anyone get a vote from Seattle? Does Jordan Morris
get a vote? That's the problem, man. That's what I said. It's just too split, because honestly, there's like four guys. You could throw Joao Paulo into that and say that maybe Joao Paulo is the most important piece that they have. But then Nico Ladero, for me, never finished in the top three in his MLS career so far. He should probably just be an honorary MVP because he is, to me, the heart and soul of everything that they do. You know, all due respect to all these other guys, Roldan and Morris and Rui Diaz, who's an assassin, and maybe he might win Golden Boot. Jordan Morris might be the worst matchup in the league, but you put them all in the same pot and nobody can decide. Yeah, you said, are you the guy that your team relies upon? And then that goes back to how you do MVP. Is it most outstanding player? Is it the best player? Is it the most valuable, quote unquote, player? I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. It's wide open. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS. Couple quick notes around the Eastern Conference since we've been hanging around there. Hebert injured in that Toronto FC win late on. That's tough for NYCFC. You said it, Dave. The Fire whooped up on the Dynamo, and the two guys that fought over the PK, Berich and Madron, both got goals. So, you know, what starts well or poorly ends better? I don't know. Red Bulls killed Inter Miami. Any thoughts on this game? Anybody?
So I thought the one thing that was interesting was they had been playing five in the back with three center backs up until this point, except for the first game. And so it was interesting to see them go away from that because it felt like what they were building towards was let's play our fullbacks as wing backs. Let's play them a lot higher up the field and let's change our shape. And Drew Yearwood seemed to fit into that really well. If you have three center backs, you kind of unleash him to cover more ground and not have to sit in front of two center backs and protect them as much. So it seemed like the idea, but again, it's 2020, so the results aren't there. Then 3 days later, they win 4-1. Now you can't go back to it and whatever else happens. But it just seems interesting to me that the Red Bulls got the performance they wanted while changing things up. How does Bradley Carney now go back to what he did before? And then you also look at a lot of young kids getting starts. Do they now solidify themselves? Is Jared Stroud going to consistently get starts? Omer Fernandez has gotten chances, so that's not new. And then Ben Mines gets a goal late in the game as well. Matthias Jorgensen gets a start. So you have guys who I think you assume are starters. Obviously, Royer is one of them. Does a performance like this do enough under an interim coach to allow the young guys to continue to get chances?
There's some rumors out there about a new coach, by the way, for the Red Bulls too.
Mm-hmm.
Barnsley, coming from the championship, he's got experience in the Red Bull family with Salzburg back in the day, I believe. His name escapes me right now. If it becomes more solid.
Oh, I can say it for you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Gerhard Struber.
Ah.
That's a strong Gerhard.
Name. Yeah, that is a very strong name.
That rings a bell.
Yeah, feels like, you know, a guy who was carrying like large, you know, things of milk on his shoulders back in the day. So, a yoke or something.
Finished his playing career with Red Bull Salzburg in 08, coached in their youth academy from 09 through 18. Then he coached FC Lefering in Austria, which is where Red Bull Salzburg sends all their players on loan. Yeah.
Samuel Tenta was there last year.
Yeah. Yep. And then he's been with Barnsley.
There's not a better candidate for New York.
Woo!
Is that the level that they're trying to aspire to? Because that's very underwhelming if I'm a New York Red Bulls fan, just because you see what's going down in the league. People want results. Yeah, you want to develop players. That sounds great. You sell them for big fees. Fantastic. You want to win trophies. How is this guaranteeing you or putting you in the conversation of a team that has ambition and aspirations to win?
But Charlie, To be fair,
San Jose hired Matias Almeida.
And doesn't mean anything. I think also you look at MLS, you look at managing in general. You've got some managers who could come in, and I think Bruce Arena is a great example of this, get talent to play at their level consistently. And then you've got some managers who can come in and probably get talent to play at a higher level, but would struggle with teams with more established talent because what they're trying to do is weird and different, and they're giving confidence to young guys. Red Bulls have built themselves as that second team. They're not going out and spending big on established DPs. So that means they need a coach that fits into that. Because if you bring in a big name coach who's like, oh, I'll just put my pieces out there and we'll win, then you will hit your level, which right now is like seventh in the Eastern Conference based on talent. So they need someone who does things differently. Whether he has to come from Barnsley and be named Gerhard, that I cannot confirm.
Yeah, we will see about that one. Rebels fans, hit us up. Let us know what you think. Charlie New England versus Arena, they got a win against Montreal 3-1. We're not going to talk about that, Charlie. They can watch the broadcast as I did. Just some good Charlie Davies on a Wednesday night. Let's talk Chicharito. He's in the lineup for LA Galaxy. Three DPs started for the first time since March. Jonathan Dos Santos, Christian Pavone, and Chicharito. Of course, Chicharito, no touches in the box. Christian Pavone banged one off the crossbar. Galaxy had some chances, and then RSL came out, got two goals, shut it down. This didn't, though, look that... like, all the encouraging parts of the Galaxy feel like they were about 3 weeks ago, and we haven't seen much of it since. Am I overly judgmental in that sense? It doesn't feel like the team that we were like, oh, okay, when Chicharito gets in here, it's going to be different. It feels sort of like, oh, you've reverted back a little bit, and now it's, once again, what can Christian Pavone do alone? And none of that happened in this game.
You have seven shots with one on target. I mean, what else do you got to say? You sign a player like Chicharito. Now, it's not like you expect him to dribble 10 people, score these fantastic goals, but you expect the team to play a certain style where you're moving teams, you're causing them to shift out of position. So an active striker who makes great runs is intelligent, like a Chicharito, is going to have success. We are providing him chances. And if he doesn't finish those chances, it's on him. But we're not even seeing opportunities, chances created. We're not seeing a free-flowing style of football that is appealing to the eye. When you have players like Christian Pavone and you have players like Sebastian Legette and you have players like Jonathan Dos Santos, players who are comfortable under pressure with the ball at their feet. This, for me, it's worrying.
Yeah, I think you saw a Galaxy team that found how they could play comfortably. And a lot of it was Zubac coming back to the ball and setting up Pavone from midfield to make runs out of that midfield position. And so now you look at Chicharito and say, one, the guy basically hasn't played competitive soccer in 5 months. So how long does it take him to get there? And two, to Charlie's point, how comfortable is he and how successful can he be if a lot of what you want him to do is far from goal? Because with Zubac, it was like, well, Chicharito can do this at a higher level and then spin off and make the run and get into the box to be another option. That was the expectation. You didn't see that in this game. And then you go behind on a penalty kick, which was unnecessary, but we have seen defensive frailties from the Galaxy if they've given teams too much possession. And then they didn't really seem to have belief that they could get back in this game. So I think you look at a team that felt like they found their feet. And now, you're adding talent in the DPs, but you're also changing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You're changing the way the team is set up. How long does it take them to now refine their form under GBS? Does he change what he did again? Or does he just play the exact same way and say, Chicha and Jonah do the things that Joe Corona and Ethan Zubac were doing?
Yeah, and look, this is not going to end for the LA Galaxy. It just isn't. That's what comes with signing Chicharito. That's what comes with spending that amount of money. That's what comes with the expectations at the Galaxy. Like, unless they're very good, everybody is going to pick them apart all the time, and there's plenty to pick at right now. Same thing goes with Vancouver, the other side of LA, LAFC, Coda, Canada, and or no, this was a Bank of California stadium.
Yeah, they're not allowed in Canada.
I don't even know where games are played at this point. It's all
just assume there's never a game in Canada.
Good point. Really good, like really good logical tool for me to use in the future. Vancouver got washed, like just rinsed.
Four goals in
14 minutes. Yeah. And then, as Mark Dos Santos and Andy Rose said, we're basically just playing not to be embarrassed, which is fair. Like, have some pride, have some professionalism. It ended 6-0. Not much to say about this game other than what you said, Dave. BWP with some spectacular finishes. LAFC just ran riot. But I did see some interesting rumors about Brian Rodriguez already leaving LAFC. Maybe already is the wrong word. We expected it to come. The rumor is Torino. Now, it's not done. It's not official. There's nothing, there's a little bit of smoke, no fire. Mm-hmm. If this happens to you, Dave, what does it mean? What does it say to you? What is your gut thinking right now?
Listen, I want MLS to be part of the world market. So for the MLS's ability to be in these conversations, getting someone from South America who's already Uruguayan international and selling them to a Serie A team, that's a part of the ecosystem that I want MLS to exist in. Because you then are in more conversations. Is Torino looking to offload someone on loan? All those things. But when you look at the pathway and you say MLS needs to step in and can be a spot between the best South American players coming from South America, coming here, and then playing at the highest levels in Europe, this is nothing new. Uruguayan players have always, at a young age, gone to Serie A. That's where Edison Cavani got his start before he even played in a U20 World Cup. That's where consistently Uruguayan players, because of Italian passports, get opportunities in that 12 to the bottom of Serie A spot.
Udinese, Alexis Sanchez, Chilean, but it's the same sort of idea.
But nothing changes for this with Brian Rodriguez. So my question is just in the future, now you're going to pitch young players, you want to say, come here, and then you could go to a higher level. Miguel Almirón came to MLS and then went and played in the EPL because that was his dream. Brian Rodriguez, when he left Peñarol, could have gone to Torino. And then he comes to LAFC. It's not been the easiest time, and I don't think that's really the issue. And then he goes to Torino. And so if you're in Uruguay and you're looking at the best young players and saying, come to MLS, this is the pathway, how has that changed things? And so I think it's great that MLS can be a part of the market and they're not losing money. They're not getting stuck. They're not maybe having him run his contract down and then leave for nothing or very little like we saw with Albert Elise. But still, LAFC coming in saying we could be a game changer. We could bring in young DPs that can lead our team to championships in MLS and then sell them at a high level in Europe. I don't think this proves that.
I think this is an interesting one. I think a lot of it comes down to the fee from Torino, right? Like, what would Torino have paid, let's say, to Peñarol at the same time that Brian Rodriguez moved versus now? And what was it, $9 million that LAFC paid reportedly for Brian Rodriguez? So you have to figure they need to make some money on this. They have to make something. Otherwise, what was the point of being the middleman? Because Brian Rodriguez didn't really deliver a championship on his own. He wasn't like somebody that they put all the chips on his shoulders. To me, maybe it comes down to, I don't know, I'm just speculating. I'm a young Uruguayan player and I would like to get a cut, or I'm an agent, let's say. I'd like to get as many cuts of transfer fees as possible. If I go straight to Torino, I only get the one cut. Okay, maybe I want multiple cuts. Or if I'm Peñarol, maybe $9 million from LAFC is more than Torino would offer me in the first place. So I'm always going to take that because I need to worry about my bottom line. And I'll assume that Brian Rodriguez will make it eventually because that's what Uruguayan players do and he's in the national team. Well, I wonder what the different like all the wrinkles here are, because these are never straightforward situations.
I know just from a player's perspective, you also have to look at the contracts. So going to Torino now versus going to Torino when you were a kid, the contract's going to be vastly different. You're going to be paid as a premier player within that team, where you're going to be essentially given all these opportunities to succeed. Whereas if you go in as a youngster, kind of unproven out of Peñarol, then your contract's much lower and they're not required to play you. They can chalk you up as you didn't make it and send you back. Whereas if they're bringing you in now, they're going to play you to make sure that you're not the one. And you're kind of put in a better situation to succeed if you're going now as a more of a veteran as opposed to a youngster.
Interesting. I don't know. We'll see what happens with this. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's just rumors coming out of Europe that his agent essentially is at Torino trying to work out the details of that arrival. Before we get to Peter Coates, who will help us understand what's going on with Atlanta, Marcelino Moreno, and the relationship between Argentina and MLS, just quick notes here. San Jose got worked over again. Like, I think we have something in the mailbag about their defensive pace. 5-0. The Rapids just ran them over. Cole Bassett looking like a $5 million player, goal and assist.
Let's talk MVP.
Jonathan Lewis.
Let's talk MVP with Cole Bassett.
No,
do it, Charlie.
Don't even
let the
do it.
People know.
After you shamed me over Chris Mueller, don't you dare come in here.
What is the turning point in Colorado season when Cole Bassett was inserted into the starting lineup in 2 weeks when they were number one in the Western Conference?
Was it the trade?
No, they turned it around before Kai got traded.
Yeah, they did turn it around before.
Don't throw this on Kai.
Don't you dare start throwing MVP that, around Carly? After a game against San Jose. Don't you dare. Oh, classic God. Overreaction. All right, let's get to Peter Coates. It's time for an AT&T 5G call to the field. All right, it's time to talk Marcelino Moreno and Atlanta United. And to bring on an expert, we have got Peter Coates from Golazo Argentina, or Pedro Coates, if you follow him on Twitter. There's a little code switch back and forth. Today, you're Peter, all right?
Yeah, that's fine by me. As I was explaining, it gets a bit confusing down here trying to explain the name when it's sounding English. So Pedro it is.
All right. So follow him on all things Argentina. I know it's one of the things that pops up in my timeline to educate me. We need some educating. What is Atlanta United getting, Peter, and Marcelino Moreno? How did all this happen? What does it mean in terms of Argentine football?
Well, I think what they're getting is a very, very good player who's coming off a fantastic season. Without question, one of the best players in the Superliga last season. Lanús finished high up the table and Moreno was central to that. It's a big blow to Lanús. They've already seen several players leave in this window. Moreno the latest and probably the most significant. I think what Atlanta are getting is a guy, you know, they've been quick to distance themselves from the comparisons with Almirón. But they're obvious when you think of not just the team, they both come from Lanús, but that kind of very dynamic midfield role with a, you know, a bit more substance to pay, maybe Pity Martinez had, who brought flair and came from River, one of the much bigger teams in Argentina after a really historic season. But I think in Moreno, they're getting a bit more of a low-key guy, as Almirón was, and someone who can really come back, help out the team defensively from deep, and then break forward at speed in rarely similar style to Almirón.
Peter, is this a player for the Atlanta United fans out there? Are they, what can they expect from this player? Is this a player who can fit into any system, any formation? Because we've seen players like Pity Martinez come to a club with no head coach. Head coach comes, changes tactics, doesn't allow Pity Martinez to get going because kind of plays him out of position. So what can they expect from Moreno? And why would this be appealing for Moreno to leave Argentina for Atlanta United, seeing what happened to Martinez you know, prior to him leaving?
Yeah, I mean, there is a definite versatility to Moreno, more so than in Pity Martinez. I think when he first came into the Lanús side some years ago and was a bit more of a bit part player, he was playing predominantly on the left-hand side, more conventional sort of winger. And I think as time's gone on, he's become a more important player for Lanús. What we've seen him play is a bit more centrally. You see him coming back to help out defensively. He likes to get the ball early. He can dribble, beats his man. And once he does and he gets away, he's very quick. And I think when you see the video that Atlanta United released on his signing, you immediately see those comparisons, I think, with Almirón. When you see him hurdling those challenges and running from deep with the ball, looking for those passes, he's got a good shot on him from distance. So I do think they can use him in a number of different ways. But as you alluded to there, Atlanta do need to sort some stuff out in-house, and therefore can't just rely on the fact that, hey, we've just got this new DP and we're going to chuck him into the team and everything's going to be great. There's that variable and the fact that Argentina hasn't played any football since March. So this is a guy who, it's not just that he hasn't been playing any competitive football with Lanús, but Argentina's been in lockdown. So Lanús haven't even been training. They haven't been able to have any friendlies. They haven't even been able to do 11v11 training ground stuff. So you'd have to imagine, even when he gets to the country, does quarantine, all that kind of stuff, he's going to need some time to get back up to speed. So maybe not one which Atlanta United fans are going to be like, okay, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have the best player in the league.
So COVID obviously had a huge effect, but we already saw sort of the exports from Argentina to MLS really speeding up, and it had already been very quick. I think it's the most foreign players by country in MLS history is Argentina, certainly DPs. Why is this right now a place where we see so many players, whether it be Babelo Reynoso coming to Minnesota, or it's, of course, here in Moreno? Is it just COVID? Is it something bigger? What is it about MLS that attracts players from Argentina in the Super League?
Yeah, I think it started before COVID. I've been saying for a while that we're seeing a lot of players do it, and I think it's only going to increase. And I think you only need to look at, A, MLS improving all the time. There's more players heading there, so it's getting more exposure. There's now players that are making a successful transition from MLS to Europe, which gives it another tick to say, okay, it's not going to be a case of, if I go there, that's the ceiling. And I think the big one in terms of, for a lot of these guys, not just in Argentina, but in Latin America, is that financially, it's a good option. I mean, Argentina pre-COVID anyway is a rather unstable place economically, to put it politely. You know, and things away financially as well, like security just in your home life and on the street. So suddenly for a lot of these guys, it becomes a real option to say, you know, I can go and play football in the US and dollars being paid on time and go and enjoy my life and have something of a normal life for my family, which can be difficult in Argentina and other countries.
Peter, what can we expect from the rest of the league? Are there a number of players who you think, oh, this is the next guy to go to Major League Soccer, or who should some of these teams be focused on as far as their progress and what they're doing down there in Argentina?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult because it completely varies. We've seen so many different types of transfers now from Argentina to MLS, from Atlanta going out and spending big on a guy like Barker, who was coming off an amazing season, was a teenager and was being talked about as the next big thing in Argentina, a huge transfer for MLS. But we're also seeing guys like, I don't know, Barrial in this window going to Cincinnati, which was, you know, surprising. It's a guy from the under-20s and going for quite small amounts of money. So it's difficult to say who's the next guy to go to MLS, because I think the scouting of MLS clubs in Argentina and South America is so broad now. It's not like they're just down here looking for a DP. They're looking for all parts of their roster because they can look at it and say, you know what, there's some of these players who will add something to our squad or to our team, and we can pick them up for a relatively small amount. They're good players. They're used to playing a very physical, very demanding league, and they can come up here and slot in. So I think the scouting now is so extensive in South America that it's impossible to say who are they looking at, because I think in truth they're looking at almost anyone, everyone.
Can I just ask you if there's any news down there on the transfer fee on Moreno? Like what did it take to get him?
I think I saw $7 million was what I read. I don't know how accurate that is, but I mean, I think it's probably in the rough ballpark of where Lanús would be looking. I mean, it's a lot of money for a club like Lanús, without question. I think it puts him outside the bracket of being able to be bought by another team in Argentina, certainly, because traditionally we've often seen Boca and River being able to snap up the best talent from some of the smaller teams, but at $7 million or even, excuse me, that's my dog. anything above a few million dollars would just be too much for Boca and River. Uh-huh. So I think it's probably about right.
What did the fans, the Lanús fans, say? What did the fans of all these clubs say? You know, Ezequiel Barco leaves. He's a prized asset. Pity leaves from River. He's coming off the best ever. Like, you think about the perception of players. I can understand why they want to be in the U.S. and Canada. For fans in Argentina who see MLS now, a market they weren't accustomed to, or were in some way, but maybe not their young, promising talent or their core players picking off, what do they think when a Moreno get sold to MLS or a Barco or maybe a Gaston Jimenez even for the Fire? What's the thoughts as far as the fan base, the populace down there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes down to finances at the end. And I think supporters are aware of that. They know the clubs are in bad conditions in almost all cases. So it really comes down to who's willing just to pay the price. And I think, you know, the Barco one's probably the best example, because at the time everyone was saying, how is Barco going to MLS when he's a teenager? Everyone in the country is talking about how good he is. He's potentially going to be Argentina's next number 10 and he'll go on to play in Europe and have this great career. So how's he going to MLS? But I think essentially it came down to the fact that Independiente don't have a great deal of money. They set their price and they don't really care who eventually pays it. So if Atlanta say, okay, we're happy to pay that amount, okay, go. And that's the same, I think, the supporters. Yes, they probably would have expected him to go to Europe had he left, but ultimately it was a case of who's paying the money. Okay, they've paid it. So long.
What's the perception of that move now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the perception of it now is that it's, you know, maybe the wrong move, because he does seem to have lost the momentum, and that's not to necessarily put blame on the league or Atlanta or him. It's just that things haven't progressed as he would have liked, as I think everyone else would have liked. I still think he's a fantastic talent. And I think at the under 20 World Cup, we saw again when he picked it straight back up, he came with the squad. I think a lot of people were kind of curious to see what are we going to see from Barco, because we haven't heard or seen a lot of him in MLS. And yet he came, and I think for me was still the best player in the Argentina under 20s. And he stood out on the pitch as soon as he got the ball, was still that exciting electric dribbler that we saw in Independiente. So I think that's, for me, promising for Atlanta's perspective, because it tells me, you know, if they could get things right in terms of the management and getting Barkov fit, motivated, they still have an exceptional talent that they can benefit from in the short term in their team, and then still potentially make a profit on if they were to sell him, because we always forget that this guy's still super young.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that management? Because everybody that talks about it here, we had Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic on with us, and he said, hey, look to South America for this next head coach, because it's not just players. It's head coaches too. Gabriel Heinze is the guy that a lot of people have pointed to.
Yeah.
Are there rumors down there? Are people connected with the Atlanta job? Is that being talked about, or is that real hush-hush?
Yeah, it's not a job which is particularly talked about. I think it would only be talked about once there was something a bit more concrete linking them with the likes of Heinze or someone else. I mean, I always said before, when the Atlanta job came up and Heinze was free, that he would be, for me, the first phone call I would make. I think what Atlanta did in the first place was get everything so spot on in terms of Tata Martino in charge, a really good coach. They bought well. All the signings were kind of a hit, but Tata was able to mold that team in exactly the kind of idea that he had. And I think since then, it's kind of been trying to fit everything else into places rather than them being set up for it. So I think for me, Heinze would be perfect, because I think he would have that continuity with Martino's style, the pressing, the kind of attacking fullbacks, looking to get the ball forward quicker than De Boer did, certainly. And I still think there's players within that squad that would benefit hugely. I think the other thing Heinze did great things with Vélez and Argentinos Juniors before that is his work with the young players. So that'd be another real advantage for Atlanta. So I don't know where Heinze is in terms of his next job. He left Vélez some time ago now, especially with the break we've had. So whether he's ready to take that step into the next job, whether he's waiting for something in Europe, I don't know. But for me, it would definitely be a phone call that I would explore to see where he is.
Dave, you had Bebelo Reynoso on the mind before we were on this call. You still have him on the mind?
No, I actually wanted to ask about other coaches. We have a Matias Almeida, a huge name. Guillermo Barros-Skelotto, big name as well. What's the perception, not playing, coaching, about coming to MLS? Marcelo Gallardo was rumored, and he's been rumored everywhere. Do people see that as a positive step for coaching? Are they still followed back in Argentina when they're here?
Yeah, I think actually with coaches, maybe it is seen fairly positively. And I think Tata, again, was fairly instrumental in that, because I think at the time when he took the Atlanta job, there would have been a lot of people maybe scratching their heads. But when you look at the success he had and then being able to move on and progress in his career, I think now people look back on it and say that was a great move for Martino. And yeah, those coaches that you mentioned, I don't think anyone's really sat there and said, why are they in MLS at all? I think people are looking at it as a good step in their careers. So I think certainly, even away from Heinze, if there were other South American coaches that were linked to the job, they wouldn't necessarily pour scorn on it. Gallardo may be the exception, because I think he's at River, which is obviously much bigger than anything other than Boca, and his huge success. So whenever you talk about Gallardo, people immediately say, well, his next job is going to be one of the very top European jobs. But anything outside of that, really, I think people would say, yeah, you know, it would be a good move.
I want to get to Reynoso, but I want to ask you, as I think about this and perception, and I think about, you know, players watching it, let's say in Europe, Major League Soccer, and getting familiar, then coming over. And we see, you know, Guillermo Barros-Skelotto kind of, you know, trailblaze a little bit and bring it to Argentina. Are games on TV? Are games available? Like, how can you watch it? How can the general populace watch it? How can coaches and players watch it? Are they watching it? Is it convenient?
Yeah, it is. ESPN Argentina do show a few games over the weekend, or MLS games. So it is on. And I think the exposure is only increasing. I think for every transfer that we get, it just alerts another set of fans to MLS. So, you know, now probably Lanús fans, if they weren't already tune because of Almirón's success, we'll be keeping tabs on Moreno. But you know, we've seen that previously with other players when they've made that move. So I think as I said, we're only going to see more and more transfers, in my opinion, over the next year, 2 years. And that's only going to draw more attention to the league. So, yeah, it's getting a decent amount of exposure. It is on TV, but I think it's only going to increase.
Before we let you go, Peter, give us the Bubilo Reynoso scouting report. Comes from Boca, never really seemed to fit perfectly there, and then was sold on whatever it was that Minnesota was offering. It seems like that's the number 10 shirt.
Yeah, I mean, and that for me is his position. I mean, when he came through at Tijeres, was a wonderful talent in that number 10 role. He's not super quick, but has a great first touch. He's able to beat a defender. He's got a good vision, good passing, and was great in that little holding or just that role just behind the striker. I don't think at Boca he really got the opportunity to play there. I don't think Barros Schelotto really wanted someone to play that role. And then I don't think he really trusted him a great deal anyway. So it wasn't until Barros Schelotto left and he got a replacement that we saw Reynoso playing a great deal at Boca. And even then, it was playing either out on the left or maybe a bit deeper. So he was asked to do a lot of different stuff. I think we saw in flashes some of the things that he could do, but not consistently enough. And I think that was a mixture of A, him maybe not having the faith of the coach and not having the chance to play in the best position, and then just not playing regularly enough. So he was never the guy for Boca, I don't think, but I think is a great pickup for MLS.
I think for some Major League Soccer clubs, they see the success of Tata Martino. They understand, okay, if we want to have a culture within the club and we have a largely successful Latino population in the locker room, we need to have someone who can communicate with them, understand them, and get them to play at their best. If you're going down to Argentina, outside of Gabriel Heinze, who else are the good coaches coming up through the system that could be potential candidates for one of these Major League Soccer clubs?
Yeah, I mean, the other guy I thought was interesting at the time was Ariel Olan, who's now in Chile with the Universidad Católica, but he was Barco's manager at Independiente when they won the Copa Sudamericana in 2017. And he's a very interesting coach. I think he plays, again, in a similar style to Martino in many ways. And I think he would have been an interesting one. Isn't free in the advantage that Heinze has, but certainly I think fits the mold. Very intelligent guy, you know, drew a lot of attention because he was using like drones in training and this kind of stuff before a lot of other coaches. So he's one, certainly. And then, yeah, I just tried to think off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, like I say, there's a bunch of coaches that, for me, that would certainly be attracted by MLS. And as you say, I think following the blueprint that I think Tata gave Atlanta is a no-brainer that a lot of clubs are now looking at South America for not just players, but coaches.
Getting some expertise on Argentina from Peter Coates. Peter, thank you so much for joining us, sharing us your knowledge. Tell people how they can follow you at Golazo Argentina.
Yeah, just go to Twitter, at Golazo Argentina, and everything else is on there, but that's fine.
Yeah, must follow if you care about Argentine football. And if you like MLS, it's basically a necessity at this point. Thank you so much, Peter.
All right, cheers, guys.
Big thanks to Peter, Pedro, for joining us. Some good insight on the relationship between MLS and Argentina and the new DP in Atlanta. By the way, Atlanta fans know this. We all know this. Frank de Boer failing up. The new Netherlands boss.
So brutal. No, I mean, no offense to Frank de Boer, or offense, I don't know. But we saw what he did with the way Tata played and then the way he played. And the Netherlands are so fun to watch right now. And Wijnaldum and Memphis, and they attack and it's aggressive. Hi, Frank de Boer. Like that, if that's what he does again there, I'm done. I'm out. I'm Jose Mourinho levels. Oh, give it boy. To me, Anders. Give it to me.
I don't think he has the drop.
This was all part of his plan to be sacked by Atlanta just to get hired.
Oh man, yes, he did have it. He had it. I thought for sure he didn't have it.
That's a low key MVP potential performance from Andre.
It is.
To have that, that's like goalkeeper, nothing to do, then makes for the sure. big save. Boom.
That's level of preparation, elite. Yeah. From Anders. Absolutely elite.
Didn't he go to Northwestern Journalism School? One of the big ones.
So I think he went to the University of Kansas. That's a you really think so? Good one.
Maybe Syracuse.
It's a great one. It doesn't get the respect that others get, but I'm telling you, it's a good one.
It's easy to be low-key when you're 120th in the country.
Ouch. Serginho Dest, To Barcelona, to Bayern, we have no idea. Also in U.S. national team land, the October camp canceled. There might be, what, a November one in Europe? And I'm sure those guys are going to be absolutely jacked to see each other if that comes off. And Nations League semifinals have been rescheduled as well. So MLSsoccer.com, U.S. soccer, the news is out there, Reddit. You can find that. Let's get to the mailbag. And let's start with this one. People have been asking about Mason Toy. And since we have Charlie, let's talk Mason Toy. Mason Toy is not going to play for Minnesota United. I think the Kai Kamara trade says that pretty clearly. Mm-hmm. So where do we send him? Where is he getting traded to, Charlie?
Colorado. San Jose. RSL.
You're going to send him to San Jose?
Oh, you cruel man.
I will send him to anywhere where he's going to get some time. Play this man. You know, there are times where you watch him play and he's inconsistent, doesn't look like he's involved, drifts out of the matches. But the times where he is playing and he is involved, I'll go back to the brace against LAFC on the road. I'm like, this kid has something. He mm-hmm. just needs to be put in a situation where he's going to develop and grow. Minnesota's not it. That's for sure. We learned that last year, at the start of last year, when they had Angelo Rodriguez, who had maybe one goal. I'll go back to that every time. How do you prevent a young, potentially strong striker within this league playing minutes and playing time because of a player who is just a hold-up player, doesn't really score goals? Either way, he needs to move on, and there are a number of teams that could benefit from having a player like Mason Toy.
I love
what
Colorado.
Does he need, though,
Charlie? That was the first show for me.
Sorry, Charlie, but what does Mason Toy need? A young striker, what do you mm-hmm. need him to develop to get to the next level? And then where does he find that?
One, every striker needs to develop the balance between hold up play, checking to the ball, coming back. Like we've seen Jozy Altidore, I think he's had a ton of success with the national team. When he comes deep, you can play off him. He can hold off the defenders and then drags the center back out of space. His layback ball to a midfielder is then played into that space that was now vacated from the center back to an on-rushing winger who comes in and creates a chance there. So the balance between that and making a run in behind, knowing when to stretch a defense, knowing when that run in behind is going to open up space, whether it's to dump it in behind where he then isn't on goal, or he makes a run into a channel and then that gets the team to move up and you bring up the lines. Having that balance. Two, knowing when to make the proper run in the box, whether it's to near post or far post. As a striker, you're always told once you're in the box first, you got to be able to understand, okay, sometimes the center back is slow to that near post, or he's always going to bite to if I make that fake run to the near post and float to the back post. And having that relationship with the wingers and the outside fullbacks, knowing where to put the ball. All of those things come with playing time.
Exactly.
It's not just practice. Right. You need to be on the field playing. Mason Toy hasn't had that.
So, is anybody in this league going to give Mason Toy the opportunity to get that? Or does Mason Toy maybe need to, I don't know, go to USL Championship and be the starter for somebody?
Oh, no. He should get it. No.
He's so an MLS level player.
Red Bull.
Okay, well, sure. But is he an MLS level starter where you give him the opportunity to work? I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, but
where
I think
you give him the opportunity to work through all that.
But
which team would actually give him that time?
But you look at teams where their goal scoring, I think, is one of those things that you can pay for. What you pay for, you get. And if you pay low, you don't really get it. And if you pay high, it's more guaranteed than other positions. So you look at teams that don't have the money to pay. I look at Houston, who might be on the verge of losing Minotas. I look at RSL, who can't spend big on a center forward. And I look at Montreal, who doesn't even have one. And those are three teams where the assets are worth it. So they will play through the growing pains because they know what they can get later on in Mason Toy is better than what they're going to go out and get on the market outside. FC Dallas went and got Frank O'Hara. That's a legitimate League MX goal scorer. We have not seen Houston do that. We have not seen RSL do that. We have not seen Montreal do that. So for those clubs, it's worth playing him through the bumps so that you can get the starting forward.
But isn't that Ariel Lassiter for Houston?
And no,
They still do have Minotas. I'm not sure we're going to see him sold. They have Christian Ramirez. I don't know that there's room. RSL has a DP forward.
No.
Stop. What about Red Bull?
Have to stop calling Sam Johnson a DP forward. They bought him for $800,000 and called him a DP.
Okay, that's fine.
They said it themselves. He's not.
They have a TAM
and he doesn't even play. Demir Krylock plays. Corey Baird plays there. Douglas Martinez plays there. That's USL guys. They don't play him. So Mason Toy fits perfectly into that.
Okay. I don't disagree with that. Red Bulls, maybe. But again, they have a lot of guys
in that pipeline
too. So I don't know about the Red Bulls. I like the Rapids, Charlie. But if that was going to happen, the Rapids should have asked for him in exchange for Kai Kamara, right? But if you look at Colorado, to me, that feels like the perfect spot for a guy who needs confidence and needs to be in just a different environment that's going to build him up in some way. And that environment in Colorado now is basically young dudes. Mm-hmm. Young dudes trying to be like upwardly mobile. And to me, I don't know if that's the perfect place for him because maybe he needs a little bit more guidance, a little more structure. But I definitely think that he would feel more comfortable than I'm certain he feels now.
I think Diego Rubio does different things than a standard center forward. And I think Robin Fraser likes that. And then his other option is Shinashiki now. So I don't know that they're looking for minutes for a guy like that. Has anyone ever heard of Thierry Henry?
Robert Kraft has.
Yeah, for sure. Charlie wants Mason Toy to learn these things that make great center forwards. Thierry Henry coaches in this league, has no center forwards on his roster.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it. And Romo Kyoto is doing Kyoto things.
I've also said that the way they play is not going to be great for Mason Toy.
You want him to go to San Jose?
All they do is look to counterattack. That is it. And play in the space. And they drop. They play five. When they're defending, they have five defenders. They have three midfielders who are tight. Bojan is like floating. You don't know if he's an attacking midfielder, if he's a number 8. You don't know if he's a winger. And then you have Kyoto who's just making runs in behind. And well-timed runs, they just whip it on the ground in behind or play it in the air. It's 1v1, pace first pace, and Kyoto has done well this year. Other than that, there is no build-up. There is no understanding of this is how we want to play through a striker or this is how we want to use a striker in this formation. I don't see it happening. Even though it'd be great to learn from Thierry Henry, and I'm sure he looked up to him as a young kid, not a good spot for him.
There is not an easy answer to that question. We'll finish here. David Skokie, who's a legend in these parts. Any truth to the rumor the Earthquakes are trying to break FC Cincinnati's record for goals allowed from last year? I appreciate their commitment to the cause. They only need to average 3.8 goals against per game the rest of the way. I believe that's 10 games for San Jose. To do it, they're already by far the worst per game at 2.92. I mean, by far, 0.4 goals more than anybody else in the notorious history, of bad defense in MLS.
Mm-hmm.
Can they do it? Can they allow more goals than FC Cincinnati in what, 11 less games?
Yeah, no. They cannot.
They could.
Are you sure?
No.
Do you see remaining schedule?
Charlie, they're not gonna give up more goals than a team they played 11 games last then. That's not gonna happen.
But if they just keep shipping 5, 6, 7s,
but then in between
you just have to do that every other game.
But then in between they give up zero, like what they did against Portland last weekend.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think it's going to happen. But
goals per game,
it could. Either way,
goals per game, they're going to win that.
A lot of changes need to be made.
But Charlie, so let me ask this though, or we have to be quick. Never mind, I'm not going to ask you this.
Okay, we'll save it for another time. That's it for us. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Hit us up. Another weekend of soccer to enjoy. Any takeaways? Let us know. Yes, please vote. Oh, also, before we get out of here, I have one extra shout out that I really messed up that we didn't do this. Of course, it's Kick Childhood Cancer Month. We're all about that. You know that. Use the hashtag Kick Childhood Cancer. $25 to Children's Oncology Group. But I just want to shout out Hudson in Olathe, Kansas. He's a 6-year-old boy, loves soccer, sharks, launching model rockets. Who does not love all of those things? He had a brain tumor. He was diagnosed. He said a 1% survival rate, less than average lifespan of 9 months post-diagnosis. Here he is, 10 months later, after 3 surgeries, 40 rounds of radiation. He trained with the team on Tuesday. He's doing his thing, man. He's fighting hard, and we're here with him. We're sending our thoughts from Extra Time, from all of our listeners, we assume. All of our energy goes straight to you, Hudson. You're an incredible dude. You're fighting, and we love to see it. We absolutely love to see it. So support Kick Childhood Cancer Month. Send a message of hope to some of these kids who are doing something extremely difficult and fighting so hard against this disease. And we'll see you on Monday, everybody. Enjoy your weekend.